story. See, I don't want to talk about that.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
CraftBeer.com
presents live from the 2010 Great American Beer Festival. Exotic wood-aged beer and the foods that love them, featuring Sam Caligioni, owner of Dogfish Head Craft Brewery in Delaware, and Sean Paxton, homebrew chef. Good evening, everyone. I'm Carolyn Smigalski, the Beer Fox, and editor of Beer and Brewing at BellaOnline.com. I'm here on behalf of the Brewers Association, which is the trade association for craft brewers nationwide. The Brewers Association also presents craftbeer.com, Savor in the American Craft Beer and Food Experience in Washington, D.C., and the World Beer Cup. This is the 29th annual Great American Beer Festival, where 2,200 beers are waiting for you on that floor. Podcasts of these presentations will be available at craftbeer.com. Our brewmaster is one of the most recognized names in American craft brewing. As founder of the first brew pub brewery in the state of Delaware, our brewmaster has made a commitment to all of us crazies out there, creating off-centered ales for off-centered people. Whether brewing a deciphered beer recipe from an ancient dig, aging beers in exotic woods like the Paraguayan Palo Santo, or chewing his own corn for chicha, there's always something new under the sun to our guest. He is the inventor of randalization and has co-authored or authored four books, Brewing Up a Business, Extreme Brewing, He Said Beer, She Said Wine with Marnie Old, and the beer book with Tim Hampson. This proves it. Playing naked ping pong in tube socks and ski goggles inspires greatness. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome founder of Dogfish Head Craft Brewery, Sam Caligioni. Our chef tonight has been coupling complex beer with food since the mid-90s. He is a home brewer himself, hailing from the craziness that is California, and travels the country creating beer dinners that live forever in the minds of those lucky enough to be his guests. And you guys are pretty darn lucky tonight. In 2008, he created the first really over-the-top Belgian-inspired beer dinner at Ebenezer's Pub in Lovell, Maine, where he served 11 courses paired with more than 15 beers, and it only gets better. As if that weren't enough, he turned heads as executive chef for the biggest beer dinner on record. This year's 2010 World Beer Cup dinner, where 2,000 people were served a five-course dinner that consisted of 10,000 plates, 600 gallons of beer for the pairings, 200 gallons to cook with, 80 gallons of wort, 90 pounds of hops, and then food. May I introduce to you Executive Chef Sean Paxton.
How you guys doing? Thanks for coming out. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Caroline. Great to be here with you, Sean. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. It's always fun, too, when you start to look at beers, you know, and Dogfish's beer, especially the fact that they're all aged in wood, that's really going to be kind of a theme in today's presentation, is the whole concept of flavors. You know, if you really start to think back when we were cavemen, the whole concept of fire and grilling and cooking, I mean, that's really the only way that we knew how to cook back then. And the flavors that were inherent, just like back in the days when wood, you know, was the only medium to use to store beer in. So the whole flavor and how those flavors interacted with both the beer and with the ingredients. We're getting a lot of feedback here. And we'll just stand way back here. But that whole relationship between a barrel-aged beer and food can really be elevated if you start to think about how in which you cook and what kind of mediums you cook with. So right now, we're actually passing out some pork belly that's been braised in the red and white. You want to talk about the red and white, Sam?
Sure. First, a couple things I wanted to say. One of my favorite moments of the GABF this year was watching Matt from Firestone bring his grandfather up for all those awards. So that's pretty, that was pretty cool, guys.
Let's hear it for Matt, his grandfather. That's annoying.
So at any rate, I love this event. GABF's one of my favorite weekends of the year. And I've gotten to overlap with Sean on a bunch of events and discussions, but we've never gotten to work directly together until now. So I'm honored and looking forward to these pairings and gotten to try a few of them. But, you know, as we were talking about, the earliest beers and the earliest food had so much in common. In fact, I'm going to Egypt next week to brew a beer based on some hieroglyphics. And in Egyptian hieroglyphics, the symbol for beer and bread is the same. It's a picture of a loaf and a picture of a cauldron that served the beer in. And back then, they made no distinctions. Both of those symbols, it just meant sustenance and nutrition and goodness. And so that's how synonymous beer and food has been since the birth of civilization. And those early beers and early breads were cooked the same way. As Sean was saying, the only fire for beer was direct fire. The only way humans were cooking food was over wood. So wood's, you know, at the absolute building blocks of both beer and food. So this first beer that is from our brewery is called Red and White, and it's our sort of interpretation of a beer that has sort of the DNA of a Belgian white beer in it. And then we try to do a lot of things from the wine world expressly to make it a beer that works really well in the context of food. And that's where I think craft beer is doing so well. And, you know, looking at Sean's career and building it around, you know, working with really exotic full-flavored foods and how they pair so well with really exotic full-flavored beers. You know, the big breweries, God bless them, have done a great job of making a very exacting, very predictable, refreshing light lager. And that style dominates the commercial brewing landscape internationally. But it's not a particularly exciting beer for pairing with food. You need a lot of flavor and a lot of complexity to stand up with full-flavored food. So Red and White was one that we said, let's make a beer that would work really well in the context of red wine-friendly foods. And by doing this, we made a big Belgian white beer that we then dosed Pinot Noir grape juice into. So a good fraction of the fermentable sugars in this beer comes from the Pinot Noir grapes. And then post-fermentation, we transfer it into these giant wooden barrels that we built, 10,000-gallon oak tanks. And the beer sits in that tank for another month, picking up a lot of the vanilla and toasted notes of that oak. So that's the beer. And Sean, can you tell us about how you came into the decisions on pairing it?
Well, the whole idea with, you know, a wit beer, you have the coriander and the orange peel. Those are wonderful flavors with pork. You know, pork is a very simple flavor. It's a great canvas to really bounce a lot of flavors off. So the whole idea, especially with the Pinot Noir grape, you know, and that wonderful flavor as an undertone, and then that oakiness of wood in there, you know, you usually think about bacon. Well, pork belly is bacon, it's just not cured. And what we did basically is it's a real simple recipe. All the recipes are gonna be in the back, as well as online at craftbeer.com. But what was fun is you basically just take your whole pork belly, and you can order this from an Asian market, or if you get to know your butcher, it's a special order usually. Sometimes they have it, but it's really worth your time to pick it out. It's actually very reasonable in cost. But what's really fun with it is you basically just pop it into your pan, a little salt and pepper on it, and then pour the beer right over it, wrap it up in aluminum foil, and pop that in your oven at 225, 300. And
for how long?
For about 3 to 4 hours. This one cooked for 4 hours. You could just see how tender it is and everything like that. And then when it comes out of the oven, there's a technique called pressing. So as it's cooked, it's kind of steamed up. It's almost fluffed up like a pillow. And if you put like a baking dish, like a lasagna pan on top of it, and press it with some weight, either some heavy cans, it presses it down as it cools overnight. And then what I did this morning is just cubed it up and then seared it off really quick in a hot pan. Just get a little bit of a crisp crust on it and just to add a little bit more caramelization, which I find in your beers. And I basically just took the beer that was a braising liquid and reduced that down, and then that's what's on top. So it's a very, very easy dinner. I also really thought, especially with fall coming up, it's really flavor-oriented. And, I mean, you could do this on mashed potatoes. You could do it on risotto. It could go really on anything.
Do we, Johnson & Wales, guys, can we get some beers and food up here, too? So we can keep, I guess we just need the food up here. So it's like the other white beer with a bunch of Pinot Noir grapes paired with the other white meat, kind of.
Totally.
Sort of.
Uh-oh, I did over an ounce pour.
That's fantastic. Oh. Do you ever have, are there some proteins, some meats that are better for pairing with beer but don't work as well with cooking with beer?
Not really. It's all really understanding the beer, and it's also understanding the meat and what you're trying to do together. And it's also really redefining, like, okay, well, this beer has these notes to it. And, you know, you kind of get that little carameliness in the background, that little candy almost flavor. You also get that coriander, which kind of adds like a citrus as well as the actual orange peel. So it really gets that citrus flavor all up, and you really get a whole bunch of things going on there as far as flavors.
And like the early beers and early foods would all be essentially barbecued, cooked over over wood fires. So old beers back in the day, you know, thousands of years ago, probably every beer was the color of a brown ale or a porter because we couldn't modify our malting process, so there weren't too many light grains back in the day. And most beers had a lot of caramel character because they're either cooked over direct fire, and that scorches the metal kettle that they were cooked in, or they were cooked using rocks that were put into the beer, which would also have that caramelization character. So all sort of early civilization beers would have had a big, strong caramel component, just as all early foods would have had a very barbecue-y, caramelized component.
Yep. And that's what I thought was really fun with this particular beer as far as the pairing. Should we talk about our second beer?
Let's do that. Well, I'm going to bite a food while you talk.
Well, this is the second one.
So all right, this is our pairing for number two.
What's being passed right now is, again, playing up the whole concept of flavor and where flavor comes from. We actually took some cedar planks and marinated it in. I got a drink.
You talk.
We got to do this one.
Oh, yeah.
No, jumping ahead there, Sam. So what was fun was that we basically did a brine on. Hey, I got to drink that. Hold on. Okay. Don't waste that. I'm a professional. Don't try that. Now, what's fun is we basically did a beer brine using a Burton Batten, which I think is a really fun beer because of the flavors and the uniqueness being an old ale and an Imperial IPA blended together then aged in that barrel. And what's really kind of fun, if you think about an IPA like that, it has a lot of hot bitterness, but then the old ale kind of balances out and gives it a little bit more maltiness. But again, this isn't a beer you really don't want to reduce down very much. So what I did is I basically took the beer, some shallots, some bay leaf, and the bay leaf kind of plays up the hop component in the beer, and then we brine chicken breasts in that. We brine it for about 24 hours since they're really thick breasts. And all we did is after the chicken breasts were removed from the brine, instead of wasting that brine, we actually soaked these cedar planks right in that to add a whole nother layer of flavor. And the whole concept of the wood-aged beers and adding that oak and that vanilla and that sometimes toasted coconut and all those other flavors that can come through, and
so
really redefining that with the cedar plank. You can also get redwood planks. You can also do all these other different kinds of planks, alder, cherry. And then having the brine actually on the wood actually helps it from burning up really fast. And it also kind of steams the food from the bottom up. It takes a little bit longer to do it this way. This is actually perfect to do on a grill where you can kind of seal it up and you get the heat that kind of does it a natural convection, and you get all that smokiness from the cedar. It's really, really fun. What do you think, Sam?
Has anyone tried this yet? This is so good, isn't it? You guys like it?
For chicken, huh?
Oh, my God. It's so good.
You guys taste the beer and the food? Quick show of hands. How many people actually cook with beer?
Nice. All right, all right.
And this is what's fun, because I really wanted to use this beer as an ingredient, not just as, oh, I'm just going to add this beer into the dish. I mean, it's really a key component, being such a simple, simple brine, that flavor and chicken, how it's just going to pair so well together. You could also do this with a wonderful pork chop. You could even do this with some steaks if you wanted to do something completely different.
Are there certain woods, like most people probably, I cook on my Weber in the backyard. Are there certain woods that are better than others to soak in beer and put on a Weber grill?
Big time.
Which one?
Or even if you don't even want to use the wood planks, you can actually use wood chips and actually soak your chips in beer instead of just water.
Yep.
Because again, it's another way to get those flavors in.
Well, I think these go amazingly well together. Our inspiration for this beer, back when when Matt's grandfather was 30 years old, full-flavored hoppy ales were still a reality in this country. And I think, we certainly all sort of bow towards Chico and Anchor Steam and stuff in terms of first-generation American craft brewers that really put a hop emphasis back into beer. But if you look at a brewery like Ballantine's from the 1940s and 50s, they were making really, really hoppy top fermented beers at Ballantine's in the 40s and 50s. That's just a style that got obliterated when Ballantine got absorbed into a bigger brewing entity, and we lost a lot of that color in those hoppy beers. Ballantine's did a beer that was called Burton Ale in the 50s, where they had, like we do, they had giant wooden tanks, and they would top off that tank every year, once a year, and then just pull a little bit from the bottom every year, and they never sold Burton Ale. You had to know somebody. It was a gift to distributors, to friends, to media folks, to beer lovers that came to the brewery. So this was sort of our attempt to bring that wood-aged, super hoppy ale kind of back to life, and it was our sort of way of saying we'd be really proud of taking that baton from Burton and doing this beer today. But I think it goes beautifully well with this dish. This is for chicken. It almost tastes more like pork or steak. It's so meaty.
It's also so juicy and dense and rich and full flavored.
Yeah,
because this is where that brine really brings in a whole other element. For those of you who don't use a lot of brines, I would really start to, especially this time of year going forward, chicken, pork, duck, all those things are really wonderful, and it's a great way to actually infuse flavor into your food, as well as to make sure that it's not going to dry out. With that brine, what's happening is basically a reverse osmosis. Naturally, the chicken has its own juices, and when you have a brine which has a higher salinity and sugar content, it actually pulls out the natural juices and replaces it kind of on a microscopic level to infuse all those flavors in. And this is where you start to really enable that piece of whether it's chicken or pork to be so juicy and succulent, because if you start to look at how pork has been bred, it's all about being leaner and leaner, like that pork belly. I mean, you think about all those great flavors, and fat equals flavor. And so if you can infuse all these different flavors into your meat and guarantee that it's not going to dry out, obviously you have to cook it right, but this technique, it's a very tender, very slow way of cooking, because the heat's coming up from the bottom up. And then you're actually getting all the flavor from the wood in there as well. You guys enjoying the pairing? Awesome.
That went really well together. So it's like molecular gastronomy, whatever it is, right? But without the pretention.
A little foo-foo.
It's foofy, but with a big chunk of wood underneath it.
Well, and that's what's fun, too, is that also make it sexy when you serve it, to have a flaming piece of wood served right at your table side.
I know I had wood the second I saw the setup. Sean.
I'm glad I could give you wood, especially with all your wood-aged beers, Sam.
Thank you.
But this is also what's fun is that make food fun. I mean, we have to eat two meals a day, right? And we're the only species on this planet that can cook. I mean, if you really stop and think about what a gift this is and to really enjoy a meal, and it's not just, Saturday afternoon with all you guys. It's also Sunday, and just that Sunday, brunch or that Sunday feast, that Sunday supper, and just slowing down, fast food and everything else doesn't really have a place, I don't think, in our diets. Slow down, enjoy what we eat and what we drink. I mean, these beers are crafted. I mean, what malts are you using in that beer?
That is a lot of Pilsner malt as a base, some Crystal, a little, I think, Maraisade, floor malted barley.
which is a phenomenal malt. And that's where you think about those flavors, too, with wood and how well those are going to shine and actually, like, be showcased and not just, you know, just the standard base malt, you know. And that floor malted malt, just to me, is one of my favorite malts ever.
Me, too. And I love what you were saying about getting people together and slowing down. If you kind of look at that longer history of beer again, and the earliest beers were discovered like 10,000 years ago, which basically coincided with when human beings stopped hunting for their food as just like individuals and came together as villages to grow crops. And that's kind of the birth of civilization. And part of that is also meals, coming together, cooking in those villages and having those meals together. So both beer and food are really, truly responsible for civilization as we know it.
And that's also what's pretty unique when you think about a beer, not just this one, but also, you know, if you ever are in curious about what kind of went into the beer, you know, Dogfish has a great website. I go there a lot when I'm looking up their beers to understand their beers. They actually have recommended pairings, which I think is really, really helpful, especially for you guys, when you taste a beer, to really stop and taste it. I know this seems so pedestrian and so elementary, but to really, like, taste what is on your palate. When you're sipping these beers all around this room, I know you're only getting an ounce, but to really just sniff it, the aroma, how your sensory is really starting to say, okay, I'm defining these different flavors in the beer, and then taking it even further and saying, okay, now it's on my palate. Wow, I get this oak, I get this vanilla, I get this nice light caramel, and how that kind of dances with this little citrus flavor of hops and bitterness. It's really a beautiful beer, and how it's balanced. It dances on your palate. And those flavors and how that could also work with food, because, again, it's slowing down. It's enjoying the nuances of these different things, because there's so many different beers in this room. I doubt you're going to find two IPAs or Imperial IPAs or double IPAs that taste the same.
Yeah, and the other and I should say my wife, Mariah, runs all of our dogfish.com, and anytime you see a Twitter or Facebook thingy from Dogfish, that's all my wife, and she's really, really good at her job. And that's really important to us, because we, outside of the beer publications, our company doesn't advertise. So, you know, our the way that we've kind of, our humble success in growing has been all about just finding a community of people that love good food and love good beer, letting them try it, and hoping that they'll go out and tell their friends about it. And that's really how all these craft breweries in this room are growing, really at the benefit and the luxury that you guys as beer lovers give us. So thank you for going out there and spreading that word. The other website I'd like to mention is you're building your chops for your food and beer pairing skills is craftbeer.com, the website that is part of this Brewers Association group. It's a beautiful place to stop and get more confidence and education on your beer and food pairing wherewithal. Where else do you send people, Sean, who are trying to get more comfortable?
Homebrewchef.com.
I set that one up.
You did a good job. But it's also fun, too, because both on my website and the craft beer website, I also have a beer brine for a turkey. You know, Thanksgiving is just up and coming in a few months. If you do a beer brine on your turkey, I guarantee you, you will have the best Thanksgiving turkey that will not be dry, that will be moist and succulent. And I know a lot of you probably have already made this dish, because the amount of hits I get on that page every year just blows my mind. And it's one of my favorite holidays, you know, the thing about turkey and flavors.
What's your opinion on taking a really righteous can of good beer, like a Oscar's, a Dale's Pale Ale, or a Back in Black from 21st Amendment, and stick it up the ass of some big bird? What's your opinion on that?
You know, beer can chicken is a fun thing. You know, I don't think it has to be a simple macro beer. If you start to really rethink and not just, you know, putting the can, you know, up the cavity, but to actually brine the beer, you know, into the chicken first, actually you're going to get a lot more flavor.
Are there, besides go-to turkey, are there other birds that like it in the can? Cooked another bird that way?
I've actually put, every year it's my wife's tradition, where we actually put the duck into the turkey. So because then it's actually, if you think about all the fat in the duck, it actually runs out into the turkey, making sure that the turkey stays moist and juicy as well.
Do you use beer in that recipe?
Oh, yeah. We use pretty much beer 300 days a year, so very few days I take off from cooking with beer because it's so much fun, and it's always expanding my own knowledge and my own creativity with these crazy 12-course dinners that I do, and even the simple 5-course ones where you think about flavors and everything else. So now what we have about ready to come out is our next course, because we wanted to make sure that you guys were, you know, satisfied and, you know, a good foundation for all the things that are going on around us. So this is a duck breast that's been marinated in the Palo Santo. We marinated it for 24 hours. We took it out. I seared it off to get a nice crust, skin side down, flipped it over, and then I smoked it in an alder wood. I have this special little smoker that's really kind of fun. I could do a cold smoke. If you have a smoker at home, that's great. If you don't, you can always use a pan and put a foil packet with some wood chips of your choice, soaking it in some beer, and then popping it into this packet, fold it over, poke a couple holes, and put that at your bottom of your pan. And as it gets hot, you'll actually infuse that pan, if you seal it up with aluminum foil, with smoke. And it's a very light, delicate smoke. I didn't want it to be too much. But again, I wanted to play up the whole flavors of wood in cooking, as well as beers with a barrel-aged component. And this is where this duck breast, I think, really showcases the possibility. We basically took... Are you drinking my beer? We took just yams. You know, again, fall and autumn is right around the corner. And we basically took... just the yams, washed them off really good, popped them in the oven at 400 degrees for about an hour till they were nice and soft, cooked all the way through, opened them up, scooped out all the insides into a food processor. You could use a mixer if you don't have a food processor. And I took some cream infused with ginger, and I thought ginger would be a great component with all the caramel and vanilla notes, as well as the wood notes of the beer that you made, and to really infuse that basic foundation of a puree. And then to put the duck breast on top of that, and we basically saved the marinade. And in the marinade, we reduced it down just about a third, added in some sautéed shallots and in a little bit of butter. And then we added a little bit of cream and just a tiny bit of cornstarch mixed in with some water to make a slurry, and added that as a thickening agent. Because if you're going to spend the money on this great beer, you've used it twice, so you're actually really getting your full thought process with the beer, and you're not really wasting it. And now you're actually having it as a sauce. And that's what beer cuisine is all about, in my mind, is to be smart, be thoughtful, and also be really conscientious of the flavors.
That's amazing, the amount of steps that you took to make this for us today, Sean. You're an artist.
Well, and, did you do? I mean, come on, that Palo Santo barrel, you just don't pick that up on the corner, dude.
No, I mean, that's... It's one of my favorite beers that we make, and today at our booth we're running it through a Randall filled with a local Denver roasted coffee. But I don't think we went through as many steps as you did to make this food. I think the biggest difference...
You want to have a throwdown right here?
And how long it takes? No, the biggest difference in sort of the brewer's art and the chef's art, I would say, is how big of an ingredient time is for the brewers, almost in the same way that temperature or, you know, wood in food is a critical component, time is really important. And a beer like Palo Santo is about a two-month beer when we make it. So primary fermentation in stainless steel, it's just a big old brown ale with a significant fraction of the fermentable sugars coming from sucanut, which is sugar cane natural, this really beautiful caramely brown sugar, really rough, unrefined brown sugar. And then post-primary fermentation, we transferred into our 10,000-gallon Palo Santo wood tank, and we're actually building a second one of those this year because the beer has been well-received. And unlike oak that throws a lot of beautiful toasty and vanilla notes, the Palo wood is very resin-rich and very dense in comparison to oak.
You kind of get that nice almost drying of the tongue, almost like sawdust.
Astringency, yeah. Caramely, spicy, that I'm confident is going to go really, really well. Are you having this pairing now? How do you guys like it? Is it good?
Good, enjoying it.
Is it good? Good. All right.
Because we really wanted to showcase what's possible, and this isn't really that hard of a dish. You know, yeah, there's a couple steps. But it's actually pretty simple, and the beer really showcases, again, in the whole dish. And that was really the whole thought process and how this works. We got to get one of these up here for Sam to try, even though you've already tried it again.
I love one. Whenever, get them first. I'll get one after. What would you say if someone's like not like a hardcore confident chef? What is the easiest and still most impressive beer, food, dinners, like main dishes that anybody could do at home?
You're putting me on the spot. I like it. But that's good. I mean, this is where, you know, if you look at the last course with the chicken, I think anybody should be able to pull that off really easy. I mean, it's not that hard, and it's really what that does to the whole process, because it does, you know, you have to be a little bit more mindful, like, okay, tomorrow I want to have this dish as I go shopping today and to go buy that. But then again, I mean, you can even do something as simple as, you know, if you have a wonderful Saison or a Witz or, you know, a Blonde Ale, these really fun beers, just bringing that up to a light simmer, you know, not a rolling boil, but a light simmer, and add in some whitefish, halibut, cod, red snapper, and cooking, you know, and basically just keeping it at a barely a simmer.
In a saute pan?
Exactly, in a saute pan. And all you have to do is, you know, for about 6 to 8 minutes, depending on the thickness, and flipping it once. And we're talking, you have a very simple dish that I think, you know, and if you don't like fish, do it with chicken breast. You know, you can easily beer poach a chicken breast as well. So I like the grilling of it because you get a little bit more of the intense flavors of the grill and the caramelization that happens with the Maillard reaction, just like the whole process that happens in killing the malt. You know, and you think about the beers that work with that, you know, like a great, you know, Märzen or Munich-style Dunkel, you know, those really work really well with chicken and pork.
A little more malty.
A little bit more malty. You know, and the other thing is to look at how bitter the beer is. You know, I know it's a real simple thing to do is to taste our ingredients before we actually use them, and that's what's so much fun is, you know, we get to taste the beer first and say, hey, this is really tasty. So you can kind of see here how just the great flavor starts to come off this as it's simmering and you tasted it, you got all that flavor. So that's how I did it in the kitchen. So
how long would that take for it to be ready using that method?
It takes about 45 minutes, give or take. It all depends if you have a grill and it's covered and you're keeping all the heat in together. But what's nice too is that this is adding a buffer between your heat source. So it's actually allowing it so that you actually have a margin of error. Therefore, you don't have to worry about, whoops, I killed it, it's dead. I mean, it's already dead. You got to respect it a little bit. But that's what's fun, too, just like with slow foods and slow, you know, beers, to really understand, you know, when you research out an ingredient, you know, and whether you have a local farmer or you have a local rancher that you're able to get different products from, or if you go to, you know, a specialty butcher and you're able to get some really neat products. We do the same thing when we go to our beer stores. We go, you know, searching out these different beers for the different seasons. You know, I'm a real seasonal eater and also a seasonal drinker because this is a beer I would have a hard time with on a hot summer day, but on a cool fall night or, you know, after a nice day of skiing, this beer would be awesome.
And staying on that idea of going out to your butcher, you know, almost the slow food phenomena or localvore phenomena, or in Western Europe they call it localvore or 0 kilometer. It's the whole idea of, you know, buying and enjoying the stuff that happens closest to your home. A couple of my buddies that own great pubs in New England are over here. And
yes.
They do a lot of
you guys want to check out a great restaurant just not too far, 45 minutes outside of Boston. These guys are doing some really fun things. I've had the privilege of eating at their restaurant and getting to know Alex and Sherry really well, and really great stuff. You know, it's really neat to see what he's doing, you know, to source local ingredients, to actually support the local economy. If you really stop and think, if you support a local rancher, farmer, food producer, that 80 cents on the dollar stays in the community, where if you spend it on to a larger chain restaurant, chain grocery store, that 80% just goes out and disappears. And if we don't support our local economies and think about the quality of the ingredients, and this is where I understand it's a recession, but when you think about meat especially, how far away that meat came from and actually how that meat was raised and how ethically you feel as far as, okay, if I'm going to eat meat, I want to eat meat that's really well thought, had a great life, and it's, you know, sacrificing itself for us to enjoy. And that's really what I try to do, and I really admire what Armsby Abbey's doing.
Amen. And then you bring that approach into the world of beer, and it's so easy. I mean, every major town now has like a farmer's market, and when you can go out and walk down an aisle and find your food that was grown in your neighborhood, remember that we all live within 10 miles of our local breweries. I know I'm preaching to the converted in this room, but turn your friends on to that. Where when they say, hey, I'm going to the farmer's market because I'm having friends coming over for dinner, remind them that, hey, when you're out doing that, go to the brew pub in your town, pick up a growler of something really fresh and seasonal, and it's exactly in line with what you're trying to do with that meal that you got the local food for, and it's never been easier to do. There's over 1,600 breweries now. Find your local one and make that part of that seasonal dinner that you were talking about.
And also what's interesting is that Mother Nature actually does a lot of the work for us. When you go to a lot of the grocery stores, you see grapes and strawberries all the way through the middle of December. Well, are you really craving a strawberry in the middle of December? And what does that strawberry taste like? And it's the same concept when you think about how Mother Nature has actually worked it in. So like our squashes or yams, all these different things are actually all in season at the same time. They're a little hardier. It's a little colder out. You need a little bit more calories. You know, and the beers, too, reflect that. You know, they're a little bit richer, a little bit heavier. The barley wines, imperial stouts, you know, imperial anything nowadays. You know, those beers are really fun at this time of year. And as well, they work great with braised meats. They work great with, you know, slow roasted stews and all these other things. The Flemish carbonades, pot roast, you know, chicken pot pie. Actually, this beer would be killer in a chicken pot pie, guys. Use that for your roux. Do, instead of milk, do half cream and half beer, and you really get a nice texture because the cream adds that fattiness that the milk would add, but then since we're thinning it out with the beer, it's a great way to do it. And then also that way, too, you're moderating how much bitterness you're going to be adding into a dish. And that's what, to me, again, is a whole reconceptualizing how in which you cook with beer. You know, beer is a liquid. There's a lot of liquids that go into baking, into, you know, marinades, everything, you know. And if you rethink what that liquid is, it's not just stock, it's not just milk, it's not just water, then you can really add a lot of unique flavors and textures, you know, because you're adding bitterness. And that bitterness is actually going to help balance out some of the sweetness, just like in the brewing process. You know, how much malt versus how much hops that you're using, you know, there's a ratio there, you know, the IBUs. All that stuff really is the same principle in cooking.
Yeah. You know, on the beer side, the wood in a beer also has a great effect of reducing the heat, the alcohol heat on beers that tend to be a little bigger. As Sean was saying, they're beers that tend to be really good in cooler weather months. And we were talking about a pot roast or the idea of slow food and taking your time to make something. You know, crock pot cooking is a really, really easy way into doing slow food at home.
Awesome.
And it's crock pot cooking. My wife is fearless on figuring out what beer to put into whatever she's making in that crock pot. And William Sonoma has good books on it. And it's pretty, pretty easy and really accessible way of putting beer into a slow food type of presentation of a dinner, right?
Well, definitely. And even like the Palo Santo, you could easily take a crock pot and add a little bit of butter and some shallots and maybe a little bit of onion, saute that off for just a little bit, and just to caramelize, and kind of that caramelization of those root vegetables, again, add some extra bitterness, because as the sugars start to caramelize, that caramelization actually adds a bitter flavor. You think about toffee, you think about caramels, you know, and it's very similar to what hops do to beer. So if you also think about, you know, in that you're actually layering flavors into your dish, then you add in some beer like the Palo Santo, and you could easily put in some duck legs, seal it up in your crock pot, and you'd have, I'm sure, a killer dinner to go over risotto, a wild rice, even over some just simple egg noodles.
And it would take about how long to cook? How many hours?
4 or 5 hours, and if you want, you put it on a low setting, and you do this before you even start work, you know, before you even leave work, pop it on, and you get home, and I guarantee you, you're going to have a killer dinner, and you know what? The whole house will smell killer, and that's what I love about any time that you braise or slow cook things. The aromas in the house, it's just like, oh, I love where I live. So, and then your friends come over, and then they start salivating as they walk in the door. Ooh, what smells so good? Oh, we're having a little bit of beer poached, you know.
Because this is like an incense thing here.
Incense, I like it,
this
yeah.
is food incense is oh. what this is, you know? It's kind of nice.
That'd be good. I like it.
So should we take some... what'd you guys think of that last pairing? Was
you guys
nice?
Like the last pairing?
Yeah.
You guys like all the food?
That's nice.
Good. So really wanted you guys to actually have a practical taste of what beer cuisine is if you're not cooking with beer enough, and just to see the possibilities where it doesn't have to be bitter and astringent. It can be really well balanced. You nice. Know, and even with Sam's beers that are pretty radical, and that's what I love about them, is because they add so much flavor and they really stand up as an ingredient. I mean, I myself cannot recreate any of the flavors in my spice cabinet, or if I go to a gourmet market, the flavors in this beer. So this becomes the ingredient, just like that beer or that beer. And if you really think about that when you're cooking with beer and really respecting the beer as an ingredient, you're going to have a lot of great just, you know, results in your food and your cooking.
And that's another place that beer kicks wine's ass, frankly, because if you go out on this floor, there's so many wonderful beers being brewed now with different ingredients. And when you do reduction sauces, you're taking the water out of that beer pretty much, and it's going to magnify and accentuate most of those specialty ingredients, whether it's cocoa or grapes or whatever it is. That stuff comes
Definitely.
Forward in those reduction sauces. Can we go a little Oprah on these people and take some questions for you?
Let's do it.
All right. Does anyone have any questions out here for Sean on beer and food cooking and pairing?
Homebrewchef.com.
Website is homebrewchef.com. Question over here. Ouch, getting old.
Hey, Sean, what's your favorite style of beer to cook with?
Oh, man, that is just loaded. It really depends on the moment. I mean, when I go to a beer store and there's a beer I've been looking for a while, that's it. You know, I mean, it's that simple. I mean, I've cooked with pretty much every style of beer. I like the beers from Belgium a lot just because they have so much complexity and layering of flavors. And if I can already start off with a beer like that, whether it's a Kriek or an Old Bruin or a Flanders Red, you know, I make a jam with Flanders Red, like a Rodenbach Grand Cru, and strawberries. Have that with some hazelnut butter for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Guarantee you, you guys are going to love your lunch. And your boss doesn't even have to know that there's beer in it.
All right, other questions? There's a couple over here. Here you go, sir.
How do you best brew with a bitter beer? And because the bitterness tends to come out when the beer is warmed. Cook with.
Well, that's the thing is that using a bitter beer, right, so you have a high IBUs. Now, what's really important is to actually do some research on the beer and understand what hop are going into the beer. So if you start to see that they're more herbally or they're more resiny, or they're more like citrusy. I mean, if you think about all the different IPAs you try out here, right? They all taste a little bit different, whether they're, you know, more your classic noble styles or some, you know, more of our new varieties like the Citra. So those will add different flavors, and depending on what flavor that beer has, you should think about that. But you might not want to cook with it. You might want to braise with it where you seal it up, and therefore it's not actually evaporating and reducing and concentrating. But if you are, think about how a brewer works with hops and with malt. There's this balance, right? And if it's not hoppy or if it's not malty enough, the hop is going to be much more aggressive. So if we think in our culinary arsenal, we have onions, we have fennel, we have shallots, we have garlic. Cooked garlic can actually be 300 times sweeter than sugar, okay? So if you start to think about caramelizing and roasting some things and actually building a foundation of sweetness, carrots are really sweet, leeks, all that stuff will add sweetness, and then you can actually add a bitter beer in and then use that, but don't let it reduce. Keep it sealed up. Therefore, it's not going to evaporate and make it much more concentrated.
Amen. We're going to do one more.
Add sugar.
Go.
Or add sugar and honey and, you know, different malts and all the other great sugars that we can get nowadays, brown sugar, molasses.
Muscovado.
Turbinado.
Madagascar. One last question.
Your question?
And they're doing a last call on the floor, and I know you guys want to get into that, so let's do one more question.
You talk about beer and spicy food, or just spice in general, like hot spice?
Like it's like an Indian curry or like a hot chili. Whoop, I just can't hear him.
He's asking your advice on pairing. What kind of beers
pairing?
Go really well with spicy foods? I would say stay away from boozy stuff.
Yeah,
stronger beers amplify that spice in your mouth.
I like a Hefeweizen. I like a Berlinerweiss. That kind of seems to cut with the lactic twist on a Berlinerweiss. Also, I like an IPA, like a real citrusy IPA that balances out. And if it's really spicy, I hate to say it, but a glass of milk. I mean, you can't deal with it.
Piece of bread.
So
we're going to be getting our hook on the stage here. Before we do, I know...
Sam, I want to say thank you. It's been a pleasure. Because of this guy, I mean, he's got some great beers out in the market, and it's really fun because each one of these beers has so much uniqueness and character, and a little bit of personality, I think, comes through in every bottle.
Thank you, John. It's been an honor to do this with you. And thanks to Johnson & Wales, the guys back there that did so
Big
much
time.
Wonderful work.
Guys from Johnson &
Carolyn
awesome.
For being such an awesome host. Thank you.
And thanks to Sam Calagione, founder of Dogfish Head Craft Brewery in Delaware. Chef Sean Paxton. Check out his new show, The Homebrewed Chef, with Sean Paxton once a month on the Brewing Network. Thanks to our students at Johnson & Wales, the AV artist, and you ladies and gentlemen for coming to this show at the Beer and Food Pavilion. Podcasts of these presentations are available at craftbeer.com for everything and anything you ever wanted to know about craft beer. Thank you.